Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Kia ora, everyone. Kia ora, Karen.
Kia ora, Louisa.
Now, we all know December the 1st is officially the first day of summer in New Zealand.
Do we also know today is December the 9th, Louisa?
Yes, that's true, but I was adding in New Zealand for the benefit of those born in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, it is also the start of Auckland Library's Great Summer Read Challenge.
Ah, there is a method in your madness.
Mm-hmm. He Paunui Tanga Raumati. So it's back for its fourth year, is that right, Karen?
Yes.
And Great Summer Read is all about reading for pleasure over the summer months, or getting back into the reading habit, reading for enjoyment after a hectic year. Perhaps, you know, you've had no time to pick out a book, never mind read it. You know, we have those months during the year, don't we?
About 11 and a half of them.
Yes, so with those, with the summer holiday period, those longer summer days, now you can. So the name says it all. Great Summer Read is a reading challenge during the months of December and January, and there are 15 challenges all up. Karen and I are going to go through some of those challenges today. You just pick one to get started, read a book associated with the challenge, and this is the bonus. You could win a prize each time you enter a completed challenge on the Great Summer Read website. So in the prize pool is something for everyone. And so go online to aucklandlibraries.govt.nz/GSR for Great Summer Read. And look up the challenges and the prizes to be won.
You can also just go onto the Auckland Library's website, and right at the center of the page, of the home page, is our beautiful Great Summer Read logo and some very attractive summer readers that will take you into all the information pages right there without having to remember the /, since I never remember those things. Just thought I'd put that out there.
Yeah, that's true. I always think the same when I hear people read out websites, and it's like, well, wish they'd slow down.
Yeah.
Just Google the Great Summer Read.
That's right. Just give me the Google keyword. That's all I need. It'll come up in the top results. Yeah.
Said like a true librarian there, Karen. So sadly, library staff can't win one of the fabulous prizes, for example, the Specsavers voucher for two glasses, not one, pairs of glasses fitted with your prescribed lenses. But everyone who enters the challenge can win a prize. It's a weekly prize. So anything else we need to tell listeners about the Great Summer Read, Karen?
Well, we need to tell them that it's a fun way to expand your reading horizon. This is a part that I always put a lot of emphasis on, not just to pick up more books, but to try something new with your reading. So that's where we came up with the tagline, heat up your reading this summer.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I did just see on
an Auckland Council article, is this a new meme that I'm not aware of about something hotting something up? Is this a new verb that's big out there that I just...
Well, we all want to be hot, don't we?
Is hotting turned into a verb? Did someone famous do that and it's now a thing? I don't know. Sometimes these fly right by me. Sometimes I'm distracted. You hadn't heard of that either? Things
maybe
hotting up?
Maybe we're just trying to, Twitter sphere and Facebook sphere, where we've got character limits. We just sort of...
Oh, right. Someone needed to cut one character off. When I say heat up, let's just say hot it up. Well, what hot challenges are we looking forward to? I've got a hot challenge that is one of my favorites every year. So you're right. I did sound a little when you went the fourth year, and I was like a dead silence for me because I had to rack it up in my brain. But yes, it is the fourth year. And I've had this every year in my challenges, which is read the book that's been on your to be read list forever. So I've actually, not only have I had this for 4 years as a goal, but I've had the same book on my to-be-read list that I'm still trying to at the top or the bottom, whichever way you count it, the one that's been there longest. Because every year I get interrupted by another one, which is kind of like second to the last, but I think, oh no, this one, I'll just do this one first.
Yeah, the new book's always
the newer edition. Yeah. But this one, you know, to be strict, it should be the one that's been on your to be read list forever. And mine is Vanity Fair. So, I hope people aren't going, oh God, another classic from Karen. But this is actually a classic, which is really contemporary. Well, it's for all ages, like all classics. But something that tells you about how much you can speak to any age is how many film adaptations there have been through the years. Most recently, a Reese Witherspoon empowered woman of our contemporary era. But there was a 60s chick, a kind of rock chick type Vanity Fair adaptation in the 60s. There was a Thatcher, because Margaret Thatcher always seems like a bitter person to me. You know, a more calculating Thatcherite type Becky Sharp. This is the name of the heroine of Vanity Fair. So Vanity Fair is actually the story of one of the literature's first unlikable women. She's a amoral schemer, so depending on what time period you live in, that could be seen as more or less useful, but technically, people always refer to that as an unlikable woman. And we all know that this is a big thing now. You know, the fact that people blame women who are unlikable women on the success or not success of a book is, you know, well, the character, the protagonist wasn't likable. So, so I'm really interested in finally finding all about Becky Sharp. So we'll see if I make it through this summer. And what's yours? You got one for that to be read list?
Well, yes. My to be read list is quite long, Karen. Not as well read as you, so I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Louise, my list. Let's bring in our lists and compare them. The more you read, the more you want to read, actually.
That's
so
true.
Yes, my list is very long, as is my bedside table stack.
But so one I've just borrowed to make a start on this list is the 1989 Man Booker Prize for Fiction winner, The Remains of the Day, by Kazuo Ishiguro.
I can see you have researched this. Got the year it won the Booker Prize.
Yes. Actually, it's on one of our recommended.
I was just going to say the prize winner's recommended list. So every challenge, listeners should know this. Allow me to tell you, so you will now know, that the challenges on the website are accompanied by lists to give you ideas of things you might want to, where you can start looking for the book that will complete that challenge.
Yeah, so on the list for read a prize winner book, so there's a list of 10 books mm-hmm. that sort of help readers sort of get started on that challenge or inspire them. I've taken for my to be read list.
You've taken it from your to be read list, put it on the list of recommended.
Yes.
Also, did we use it for books into movies possibly? But anyway, go ahead.
Oh gosh, I can see how this works now. So from what I know, it's a story of a long serving loyal butler reflecting on his dignified life of service to his aristocratic lord. He's foregone love, family for his career. So I think it's set in the 1950s. I've just started it. Way into the 70s, and it's also influenced by events from the war. It's a sad story, but The Guardian considered it a book you can't live without. So another compelling reason for me to pick it up. And that one will be my first entry in the Great Summary Challenge.
That's interesting. I'm wondering if The Guardian thought it was a book you can't live without because of the beauty of the writing. I'm a big Kazuo Ishiguro fan, so I certainly think it could be just for the joy of his writing style. But I'm wondering also if it's something about understanding England today, what it is and where it came from, because we read that book from my book club long many, many years ago. It was on our to be read list of half of the book club.
The working Karen.
Yeah. But it does evoke this bygone England, which actually is a reason why a lot of people here in New Zealand, I think, I'm looking the bigger picture here of families that left England looking for more opportunities in New Zealand actually were leaving that hierarchical lordship who owned you and you owed him deference.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, already I'm picking, this is quite sad, isn't it? In fact, it's quite funny you should say that, because I find my reading voice when I'm reading it, I feel I'm in the voice of the butler, the sort of restrained, you know, butler voice, you know, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? Just read it, you know, get on with it, you know, but yeah, it's his writing style. You really sort of are absorbed into that period, into that mind. So yeah, thank you for that insight.
Yeah, so in that period, you know, this takes us back to how many people in New Zealand have European ancestry. So, you know, we have this other challenge, which is one that
I love,
which is the read a book. Oh yes, thank you. Call it a bridge. That's my bridge. Read a book set in a place where you have ancestors. And, you know, this is one that somebody actually has already fed back. We're only a week into the summer read, that they didn't like my present tense of, you know, a place you have ancestors. That I think then my impression was this person wanted us to say you had, because your ancestors are no longer alive. But actually, they are still our ancestors. I think if any place, if New Zealand has a worldview where we understand they are your ancestors. And so I'm really fascinated by that. So it the idea of have ancestors meant you didn't have to tie it down. You could even have heard, it could be a family story that, you know, years ago there was a sea captain in your family who came from Faroe Islands, and so you get to read a book set in the Faroe Islands. If there are. Oh, yeah, there is one. In fact, Jenny Patrick, New Zealand historical novelist, has a dashing sea captain from the Faroe Islands. I should have mentioned that. That was not all my ingenuity to use that example.
Mm. Yeah, well, actually, I'd find that one quite challenging for me. With my father being born in Rakanga of the Cook Islands, I'm not sure if there'd be too many books on that special little island in the Pacific for me to choose from.
Well, it doesn't have to be a novel. You don't have to have a Jenny Patrick writing about the Cook Islands. It can be a nonfiction book. So we've got quite a few of those. You could be reading a book about the history of the Cook Islands.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Melissa Manapuri from our team in Central Library has unearthed some fantastic Pacific stories from our basement, treasures from our basement, and which can all be borrowed. So that's true. I shall seek some advice from you.
Yeah, and anyway, that's half of you. That's your paternal side. What about your maternal side? Where does that lead back?
True, Scotland.
Oh,
Mum's side is from Scotland.
Well, Scotland is perfect because in our recommended list of books that you could look into for 10 different places you might have ancestors, I did include Scotland on that list.
Oh, thank you so much.
Not a rarity in New Zealand for people to be descended from Scottish stock. And I put one of my all-time favorites, which is The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. So this is a Muriel Spark novel set in Edinburgh. You don't know if your mothers were Glaswegian or
Grant, surname Grant.
Okay, not Brodie, but at any rate,
it doesn't help us. Whiskey.
Is that? Oh my God, I didn't even know. Is that a whiskey?
Yes.
All right. Well, pour us a dram, a wee dram, and I'll tell you about Miss Jean Brodie. So you should read The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. This is talk about unlikable women. So she's a schoolmistress, and the story is a short story. It's almost a novella. Set in this girls' school. Didn't you go to a girls' school?
Yes.
Catholic girls' school.
Yeah. Yes.
So you're not going to name it on air?
No.
Anyway, Miss Jean Brodie is the schoolmistress with a difference. So she's bringing up, she's got a set. She's a domineering, manipulative woman, but also a romantic fool, quite foolish, which leads her into some bad places in the book. But very, you know, passionate and definitely got verve. And her thing is this set of girls that she manipulates to carry out her wishes and her other lives that she hasn't been able to paths she hasn't been able to follow, and where that takes them to. And it's just a really, really, really great read. So
I'm sort of liking her, even though she's supposed to be unlikable.
No, but she's such a joy to read about, because also because Muriel Spark is just so witty and sharp and perceptive, and then there's that great, you know, Scottish setting. So but in terms of unlikable women, so I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell me.
Is that one of ever challenges? Read a book about an unlikable?
No.
But yes, funny you should ask, because recently Michelle Obama, on her Becoming book tour, that's the title of her book, has been commenting about not being a fan of Sheryl Sandberg's lean-in approach to women making it in the workplace or in life, I guess. And it reminded me how I questioned her mantra and her methods when I read her book when it first came out.
We're saying Sheryl Sandberg's book.
Sheryl Sandberg's book, yeah. Lean In. And yeah. Am I getting this?
No, there were two hers. There was two. There's Michelle and there was Sheryl and then there was her book. I just wanted to make sure I had it clear.
Yeah, Michelle is commenting on Sheryl's book. Yeah.
So that was the famous line. Did she say, sometimes that shit doesn't work? Is that the one?
One Karen's spot on. Ah, yes. I love it.
Sheryl Sandberg seems quite unlikable to me.
Yes.
What about you? Because you read her book. I haven't read it.
Yeah, well, I just didn't relate to what she was saying. I didn't relate to her world at all. I think I put the book down after two-thirds of the way through, thinking, okay, I'm going to get something out of this. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's reading it. But no, she's about how to make it in a man's world by taking men on at their own game, by being a tough woman. And
telling lies like men do at the top of the corporate world, am I right? Isn't that what she's recently come out about?
Is that what she's doing when she's leaning in? She's, okay, not always being honest. But I think it's the Sagittarian in me, but I actually want there to be more fairness than toughness.
Yeah,
in the world. And I think that's what Michelle is trying to sort of balance it out with.
I mean, the thing that I resent is the use of feminism as a way, I think it's co-opting feminism to use it as a of saying this is how you advance your career in a powerful way, and so therefore that makes me a feminist. Actually, feminists should be against a war between, I'm going to be just as bad as, I'm going to fight the men's battles like they do and be just as bad. Feminism should be for a fair, more equal world in which nobody is behaving badly at the top of the corporate world.
Yeah.
Not that we're going to join the men up there,
I'm with you, and I think slowly people are coming to that way of thinking as well, that Sheryl Sandberg's book, I think, came back out in 2013, and there's been a lot going on in the sort of Me Too era as well, since then, and we're sort of rethinking all of that. So, yeah. And I was just thinking, the word feminism, well, it wouldn't be, just referring back to the word from being female, we want a female approach to the world, don't we, as well?
Yeah, we want everybody to be able to have their approach and be able to follow it and not have doors shut in their face as they follow their own path. But I really resent the idea that putting a woman into a powerful position is so that she can use power just as badly and corruptly as the current state where men have been doing it for the patriarchy has been doing it for many years, so we say. But how do we get into
Sheryl?
We digress.
Unlikable woman.
Oh no, so that was one of your books. Are you reading that for the Great Summer Read?
Well, I'd like to read Michelle Obama. I've already read Lean In. I would like to read Becoming.
So it doesn't count. You have to start now. Did you read it after the 1st of December, Sheryl Sandberg?
No. would be cheating. Okay. That would be a reread.
You can read Michelle's book, which is Belonging.
Or is there a challenge? And finish that book you never finished.
Oh, that's a great one. We'll put that one down for next year. I was back on the Ancestors one that we hadn't. Have we finished that? We got your Scottish ancestors was going to be Miss Jean Brodie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. What about your ancestors? Your Slav ancestors, Karen?
Well, it's funny you should say that because I'd just been thinking about that when I was looking at the list of challenges, that I'm one of those people who I love when I travel to a country buying a book written by an author born in that country, writing the culture of that country. And I always think I'm going to read them in the evening after my long day traveling and, get the better sense of the country. And of course I never do. I bring them home and they get added to my to be read list because you're having such a fun time while you're traveling. You're going, oh, why should I stay in and read a book? So I've got quite a stack of books bought in the Czech Republic in my many trips. And I've got one, for instance, that I really want to get to, which is by this author named Joachim Topol, which is such a great name. And he, started as a rock band, as a musician in a rock band and a poet. And the book that I want to read now is a novel, but his original first book of poetry was published during the period of Soviet repression after the Prague Spring and before the Velvet Revolution. And it won the, talk about, remember we had that program about offbeat literary prizes? It won the Tom Stoppard Prize for Unofficial Literature. So Tom Stoppard being the author of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, a Czech, from a Czech refugee family, grew up in England. And he started this prize, very successful playwright, and he started this prize for books that were published in Samizdat when these books were not allowed to be published in the Czech Republic, the underground books that were photocopied, kind of an early version of zines, and handed out, passed over on the subway. So, yeah, so that's my...
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So then the other one, another one that I wanted to get to before we get too far along, because it's one of my favorites, and it's everybody's favorite. Every year we get so many people chiming in about how they love this challenge, is the reread a childhood favorite challenge. Read a book that was one of your childhood favorites. Did you see that one?
I actually find that one quite difficult, but I did come up with Black Beauty. I always remember, and because, you know, you read it when you were a child, you sort of like, well, how did that story go? So it's a good idea to, you know, refresh your memory kind of thing, and relive that, you know, take you back to your past. So Black Beauty would be mine. What about you?
First let's talk about Black Beauty. Allow me. No, because I read and reread Black Beauty. It was one of my childhood favorites. I remember just being so sad. Talk about exploitative. This is, you know, in the terms of the maltreatment of horses. And her little friends, what was it, Merrylegs, Little Pony. And it's actually told in the voice of Black Beauty.
Yes,
aren't I right?
It's
narrated in the first person, yeah. So it'd be really interesting to see if, you know, in the intervening years, having become a Karen wants to speak to her manager age group, whether looking back I'd be more angry rather than so sad, like as a sort of powerless child yourself who doesn't have input into how the world is run, not that we have that much more, but a little bit more as an adult, maybe some of that sorrow, you know, just, oh, I'm just going to go indulge myself in a sad book, lie on my bed on this rainy day would come more to an anger.
A rainy day read, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is that? There's something about books that make you cry are always good for rainy day books, rainy day reads.
And summer, because you feel like you've been robbed when it rains in summer. So, you know, it's just picking up a book is just perfect for those days.
Yeah. I remember really clearly having books that I knew would make me cry and deciding that this would be a good afternoon to have a good cry and picking. One was Rascal. It was a story about a little raccoon. They seem to often involve animals. Some of them were Louisa May Alcott books. I used to always cry at Little Women. But it's the non-human, you know, how what I was just saying about animals. Somebody had proposed when we were gathering ideas for the challenges, read a book with a non-human protagonist. So Black Beauty would have fit in that. And I had thought, well, if we do that one, I was going to reread, so this is non-human and reread childhood favorite, Pinocchio.
Oh,
non-human.
Okay. Ah, that's cheating. Doesn't he become human in the end?
Well, okay, that's at the end, but most of the book is his quest to become a human. He's actually a little wooden toy.
A cute wooden toy.
And it also has the cricket in it, so I could, Jiminy Cricket.
Oh, that's true.
It could be also a non-human protagonist. It's Stuart Little, another one. So Stuart Little is like a little human, you know, a little mouse, but is technically not a human. And then somebody else said another one I know that's really popular for that one is Watership Down.
Mm-hmm.
Which I only read when I was in my 20s, so I'm not sure if I could call that a child. Well, I did have a pretty extended childhood. So perhaps I should count that among my childhood favorites. So moving on, we've got our beautiful list here of our watercolor sun and our beautiful list of bright blue challenges.
What challenge
I wanted to focus on for a second highlight, read a play, poem, essay, short story, or something else you normally wouldn't.
Oh, I've got one. Okay, right, perfect. Because the other day in the library, I picked up Harry Rickett's Winter Eyes collection of poems, its latest book out. And I picked it up because at some point during the year, I listened to a podcast with Harry reading, so touching, Elegy in Limerick. Is it a sad poem?
The Grief Limericks.
The Grief Limerick, in the Limerick form. Yes, about his stepson Max, who had sadly passed away. In fact, each verse starts with, I once had a stepson called Max, and he read it, and I'm sure I wasn't the only listener who, you know, had tears in the eyes streaming down during the reading. So I was actually going to read one of the very cool poems in it that Harry has written about. He's on holiday in a holiday home at one of New Zealand's lakes. Sorry, I forgot the name. Because I forgot to bring the book in.
Oh. We'll find another occasion, don't we?
I'm kicking myself. It was such a lovely poem about holidaying and reading.
Kick yourself no more, because when I looked at that challenge, I thought, why don't I grab my copy of Carla Green, editor of wonderful book, 150 New Zealand Love Poems. So this is a great book that people could pick up if they were going to read a poem, something they normally wouldn't.
Karen to the rescue.
To the rescue, because I don't have, there are Harry Ricketts poems, but not the, these are older, but there is a beautiful one by Fiona Farrell that I thought I could read, which is called 7 Wishes. 15 challenges, 7 wishes.
Okay.
Isn't challenge 7, is it? So this poem
numbered, sorry.
Oh, I
just
wanted
to point it out to the listeners. They're not numbered. You do
any order.
Any order.
As
you
many
can just
times.
Do 1 or 15, whatever you feel like. It's your holiday.
That's right.
Carry on.
So thank you, Louisa. So this poem is called 7 Wishes by Fiona Farrell. A straight account is difficult, so let me define 7 wishes. That you should fit inside me, neat as the stuffing in an olive. That you should stand inside the safe circle of my eye. That you should sing clear on the high rock of my skull. That you should swing wide on the rope of my hair. That you should cross rivers of blood, mountains of bone. That I should touch your skin through the hole in your t-shirt. That we should exchange ordinary tales.
Oh,
so that now, who would not enjoy, even if poetry was not a thing you normally read, who would not enjoy that? And did you have an example for some of our others, plays, poems, essays, or short stories?
Wow, not today, because I thought I like the idea of the wild card.
Yes, well, but I was still on poem essay, because I was politely giving you a chance to put out if you had another unusual form of literature. And then if you didn't, I was going to say, don't worry, I do. I'm not
so
ready to
sorry,
move on to Wild Card
all.
Challenge
Here we
yet.
Go.
So
what have you
I've brought
today?
A wonderful book about flash, which is a collection of flash fiction. This could be another thing that people normally wouldn't read. And this book is called Bonsai, very clever, bonsai being a small tree. And it's Best Small Stories from Aotearoa, New Zealand, edited by Michelle Elvey and Frankie McMillan and James Norcliffe. And I've also got a quick example from flash fiction collection, and this one is by Simone Cajo, and it's called Red Sea. There was a red sea on his knee with scalloped skin shores. I was impressed by the brightness of it, how much white glinted in the sun, maybe because his knee was bent. He was riding on the overbridge where Oakley Creek passes into the mangroves that become Point Chev Beach. That's where the escapees from Carrington would run and hide and wait, we'd say, because they wouldn't know what to do next. Don't look down there for too long, because you might see someone, or they might see you. He straddled his red bike jauntily. The sun was too hot, his skin flickering, wet, brown. He was weaving, the handlebars twisting the wrong way. I felt like I shouldn't be watching. Go home, someone yelled, or come with me.
Oh,
I thought that was very appropriate, because it's at Point Chev where we are here at Planet FM studio taping.
Yeah, and I actually grew up with some friends grew up in Waterview who used to do exactly that, hanging around the Oakley Creek and waterfall in the summers.
It really shows how flash fiction can capture that essence of a thing, you know. Mm. So especially if you don't like too many words, if you're like my husband, complains that I often use too many words.
Or if you haven't been reading for a while, you just need those sort of sound bite, I guess. Readings to get you back into the groove.
So anyway, on to the wild card. So we've still got a minute left. So what did you have a favorite wild card that someone had mentioned to you?
No, but I just, you know, I was just thinking how, you know, it's your chance to be imaginative, silly, you know, inventive, whatever your mood, to, you know, sort of once you're in the groove of reading, I guess, you know, do something wild.
Yeah.
Have you got some examples there of what people have done in the past, Karen?
I do. So last year, three that I really loved was one, someone had said, read a book recommended by a friend, and she had read it into the darkest corner because it had been lent by a friend. So I thought that was great. And then someone had put, read a political article which doesn't support your own views.
Ooh.
It's very appropriate for today's world. And then someone else had started a book club for their wild card challenge. So
we're big on that idea.
So I've got a challenge that we should put in for our wild card, Louisa, and it's listen to books and beyond.
Karen, if they're listening, they're already listeners.
Spread the word. Recommend it to a friend. So that's our show for today. It was fun, wasn't it, Louisa?
It was fun. And don't forget to visit our website to sign up for the Great Summer Read. Enjoy.
Win yourself that designer eyewear.
Yes. Wish I could.
Kakitiano. This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz
and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.